Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
We just put the microphone so we can record the chiming of the...
I think your alarm's going off.
This sounds like Rome, doesn't it?
Is this
what Rome sounds like?
It definitely doesn't sound... It sounds like London Bridge, does it? So.
You can hear the sound of someone selling cornettos on the streets below. Hello and welcome to The Ruck, and welcome to our Rome broadcasting studios. We are rooftop overlooking the Colosseum, just around the corner from the Plaza Repubblica, and I am joined by Alex Lowe. Alex, how are you going?
Very well, thank you.
Alex, do you do the marks out of 10 for the players after the game yesterday?
I did do the England marks out of 10, yes.
And what do you give Sam Simmons?
8.
If you were marking your fellow journalist, what would you for the weekend? What would you give him, Johnny Fordham of the Sun?
Full of
these. This sounds as good as your player ratings.
These ratings are harder to do than you think. A good shift and a snappy intro. 7 out of 10.
Oh no, at least an 8.
Okay, no, well, Sam Simmons got 8. You've got 7.
Okay.
The point is, what a privilege and a pleasure to have Johnny with us on this podcast,
isn't it? And he's brought a panini with him.
I have ham and cheese.
Just for context, classics. Just to
all the classics in Rome.
Johnny is majoring in Roman classics. So on that very subject, Johnny, if you had to rate them, which would be better, England's performance in the Stadio Olimpico last night, or your tiramisu afterwards?
No, I didn't. I didn't quite enjoy the tiramisu afterwards. It was
you struggled, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. I was struggling last night. It was a bit too heavy for me. I like a little bit lighter with a bit of cream. But
the tiramisu was good looking, sweet. Immediately satisfying, but soft and maybe ultimately lacking in substance. What was the difference between the tiramisu and the England performance?
I think the England performance was rough around the edges, I'd say. It wasn't silky smooth. It didn't have that kind of creamy finish, apart from Sam Simmons and Anthony Watson, who, you know, great attacking moves for their tries. I think the rest of it, there wasn't really much to get stuck into.
It's
apart
a
from
the sprinkling of chocolate powder.
Yeah,
on
there
the
wasn't
top,
too
wasn't
much
there?
To get stuck into apart from that, really, I felt.
So here we are, Monday morning at the end of what I thought was a really engrossing opening weekend of the Six Nations. Alex, you've seen all the games. You were with us in the Stadio Olimpico yesterday. We should just say, where's Jonesy?
Well, we don't know. We think he might be in the gym.
He's not here. Anyway, Jonesy he went to the Wales game and he sent us some discussion points because we can't really pod without him. So we'll get on to that later.
He won't let us pod without
him. Well,
he
just thought he couldn't really let the kids loose on the podcast without him. So we'll do our best. I asked you about Sam Simmons because he's the headline boy today for across all the newspapers, which is hardly really surprising. After 2 tries, 23 tackles. You gave him 8 out of 10. We actually discussed that, and I thought that was about right. Mm. I thought it was one of those sort of showpiece performances from him where he really glittered in the last sort of 15 minutes when Italy had basically been broken. I think we'd be going over the top to hail him with quite the enthusiasm that the newspapers today generally have.
At the start of the day, I did the England ratings, and Rick Broadbent, our colleague, did the Italy ratings, and you want to try and make sure you're operating on the same parameters. And part of it is the opposition that you're facing, and we know that Italy are dogged and they're improving under Conor O'Shea, but they don't have it in the last 20 minutes to keep up with a team like England, and that's when Sam Simmons really took full advantage. And in some ways, that counts against him if you're looking at a star man performance, only because he can only play against what's in front of him. But a 9 or 10 out of 10 performance against Italy would be over the top in my view. I think he had a dogged, solid game. He made a stack load of tackles, as you said, and then the chocolate powder was sprinkled on at the end with 2 great finishes. And what's interesting for me is that after putting all that work, he still had the turn of pace to score them. Anthony Watson was the official man of the match, who had his game was kind of in reverse, a reverse of Sam Simmons. One particularly sparkling finish at the start. He made some important tackles when the pressure was on, from Italy. But otherwise, I didn't feel it was a man of the match performance any more so than Sam Simmons, which is why I gave both of them 8 and Chris Robshaw 8. You have to judge it on the day, and these parameters of ratings, you know, everyone's going to have a different view on it.
Just while we're on ratings, what's the lowest you've ever given an England player, and who was it?
Oh,
Johnny, you do ratings.
Let me think.
Maybe a 2 or something like that, I reckon. I think I gave Joe Marler a 2 in the that infamous Wales game at Twickenham 2 years ago. I actually gave Anthony Watson a 9. I thought he was a star man, purely because that second try, because we were on the right side of the pitch looking at it, I thought that the way that he kind of looked his man in the eyes and then turned on the afterburners, and then with that finish, I thought that was absolutely superb.
I thought
that was brilliant. It doesn't matter if it's against Italy or the All Blacks. I think you've got a individual skill like that, and the pace that he showed and the composure to finish like he did, I think that was the most special moment of the match. I think, yes, Sam Simmons made a lot of tackles. Yes, like you said, at the end of the game, Italy were, you know, out on their what do you call it? I don't know what the Roman sorry, the Italian word for
paninis,
backsides is. So yeah, out on their paninis. I just thought that for me is going to be the image that I take most from the game, is that Watson try, not the Simmons ones.
I think it was a day for not having a man of the match. You should have had 2. The combination of Ford and Farrell was, for me, what the whole England performance was about. Pretty much everything they did well was about those two together. I thought they were brilliant.
And also Johnny May as well, coming off his wing to link. It was that move was repeated, and it was, you know, the Ford loop. And I know you were getting very excited about it, Slotty. That's just obviously straight off the training ground.
Yeah.
And then clearly you've been working on that.
Owen Farrell afterwards was being particularly kind of chippy and a bit snide, actually, with the media.
That doesn't sound like Owen Farrell.
When he was asked the question about that combination and the loop that they executed, and he just kind of scoffed and said, well, everyone does that. Every team does that.
But that's nonsense. I've watched that... Well, sorry, we have all watched this England team for decades. George Ford, has he wrapped round Farrell once in your memory? He did it 3 times in the first 10 minutes.
It has been growing into their game. They have done it. But you know, Jonathan Sexton, it's his favoured attacking move. But the point was not that other teams might do it, and the point that Owen, I felt, was missing, was that England did it with such precision that they created the space and carved open opportunities so easily. Like it was... And the point that people were trying to get to in the conversation with him was, this is something you've clearly been working on, and George Ford did touch on it, the accuracy, taking what they do on the training field and where they work, as Eddie keeps saying, under higher intensity than matches, and then reproducing it on the field, and that's what they did, and that, you know, those moves with Johnny May, and you wonder how much that Leicester connection is helping, coming in off the wing, linking with George Ford and actually getting involved as a playmaker, not just as a finisher, was really special and was hard as well for the rest of the championship for England.
Do you think we've just been a bit harsh on Owen Farrell here and his attitude to the media? He's just uncomfortable with the media, and all he really wants to talk about with the media is his dog, isn't it?
You can't stop him talking about his dog.
What's his dog called?
For those who don't know, he mentioned it once that he had a dog, he liked taking his dog for a walk, and when it was mentioned again, he was appalled by the fact that anyone might be interested in the
health. He did like talking about walking his dog on the beach, and
he did,
and
but then he regretted
training the dog, and
then he regretted, you know, giving too much
showed
away.
A real side of him of himself there, which he's not comfortable with.
He's very kind of process driven, isn't it? It's, you know, you do this, you do that, and you get that result. I think he's a brilliant rugby player, and like you were saying about the kind of doing the simple things well. I mean, I did an interview with George Ford that went in on Sunday's paper, and he was basically...
It was a great piece, by the way.
Thank you. It was basically talking about the attack and how England's attack, what they want to do, is they want to do the simple things well, but they want to do...
It was a really, really great piece, Johnny.
What was your favourite bit?
The bit about George Ford.
The pictures?
Yeah.
There's a good graphic on there, actually, as well. But he was talking about how it's not about doing things that people go, wow, how did they do that? It's about doing the simple things and executing them like they did, and to do that at that, the speed, the precision that they did, and that's what they want to be doing, because that's effectively what the All Blacks do. And then, you know, if you have to play unstructured, broken play or whatever, and you're offloading or whatever is up to standard as well, that's when it all comes together.
They'll come across tougher, probably more intelligent defences in this championship than they faced in Rome, but the best defences, however well drilled, can't cope with that kind of pace and execution of skills. That's what opens defences up. If you're going to create space in the modern game with so many players strung out on the defensive line, you've got to have that precision, and that's why I say it harbours well for the rest of the championship, because if they can keep producing with the speed of ball and the speed of thought, and I thought George Ford was mixing his passing up really well. The handling from the England forwards was outstanding. I mean, we all know what skills Mako Vunipola has, but seeing Dan Cole and Dylan Hartley getting in.
Dylan was one of the main carriers in the first half, wasn't he?
He was, yeah.
Yeah, he punched a couple of good holes, actually. He much more involved than he normally is.
So the other element to that first try in particular, I thought Ben Teo faded a bit as the game went on. He began to look like he hadn't played for 4 months, which he hasn't. But that, so 3 minutes in, his first carry, when you watch it, strong and direct carry, kind of typical from Ben Teo, but it immediately narrows the Italy defence. You can see as soon as he punches across the gain line, they all move in, and off the back of that, England go wide and score in the corner that has just been left vacant. And that shows the real benefit of having a direct ball carrying midfielder that the other two playmakers can play off the back of.
Back to Sam Simmons. So for me, he obviously finished brilliantly. First hour, he had a few carries, but did he break the gain line? Did he really break a tackle? So I'm just wondering, for the rest of the Six Nations, for what will clearly be four tougher games, do you see him having that same influence?
He's not a carrier like Billy Vunipola or Nathan Hughes. We know that, but what he does offer is that he has a step on him. He's obviously got raw pace. I think a couple of years ago, he was actually the Premiership Singer Sevens player of the tournament as well. Little plug to our friends there at Premiership Rugby and Singer Beer. And that just shows that his kind of athleticism. And also, Jack Now talked about how in training, he does a lot of stuff with the backs. So he does a lot of pace work with the backs, which just shows how, I haven't heard of any other forwards, especially in this England setup, doing that. I mean, he is different. He isn't going to be able to punch holes with his size, I don't think. But he's quite nuggety as well, I think, isn't he?
He's got a weird engine, isn't he? I know that's a funny thing way of putting it, but
it's highly tuned.
He didn't look tired at the end, did he?
No.
I reckon if they'd said, all right, we're going to start the game again, he'd have just gone through another 80 minutes.
I'm sure he can have an influence because that turn of pace allows him to exploit a gap that most defences won't expect a number 8 to exploit. He's a completely different player to Billy, as we all know. And one of the themes of the week in the build-up was trying to get an idea from England about how that changes the way that they want to play. Some of them felt like the question was a criticism of Sam Simmons. I know that Harry Williams, his teammate, certainly took that impression from the question. And that wasn't ever the intention of those questions to the England players. It's simple. Billy Vunipola or Nathan Hughes are 5 stone heavier than Sam Simmons. Sam Simmons is way quicker.
It's a massive
amount. But Sam Simmons has an explosive pace that those two don't have. So it's not criticism of Sam Simmons that he's not those two. But the point is England have to accommodate him. He's the best number 8 option for them at the moment. They have to accommodate him. And the way to accommodate him is to look for other players to bring that sort of heavy duty direction and ball carrying, and that's where I think Mako came in. Dylan Hartley stood up. Ben Teo was used. The three locks that they picked all got their hands on the ball, and by doing that, they're sharing that workload around that maybe Billy or Nathan would have done more of themselves. And as the game opens up, that's when Sam Simmons comes into his own. And you do wonder, when everyone's fit, where he fits into that back row and whether he's.
He's a super sub, isn't he?
He's a classic super
he's
sub.
He's your ultimate finisher. Bring on with 20 minutes to go. Oh, I think yeah. He'd be awesome. But does that mean he has to take Billy off? I don't know. We're sort of looking way into the future.
In a strange way, I know obviously Ben Youngs, it looks like his tournament could be over after that knee ligament injury. But if Sam Simmons went down now, you'd be looking around thinking, what on earth would England do at number 8? Because Zach Mercer hasn't played a test match. And, you know, with the games coming up, I think England could really rely on Sam Simmons. They're going to need him. And then they're going to need him to do that work late on and around the edges. I think he's going to be... He could be crucial.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Okay, so fast start from England. At this point, after one round of games, which country would you say is ahead of the game? Were Wales more impressive than England?
It's expectations, isn't it? Wales were remarkably impressive, and Warren Gatland probably has every right today to be feeling a bit like, yeah, I told you so, because everyone had written them off on the basis of them losing virtually every key player that they have to injury, from Sam Warburton, Toby Faletau, Dan Bigger, Liam Williams, six.
Johnny, you hadn't written them off, had you? You were smart than that.
I hadn't written them off, but I didn't necessarily predict that Scotland would beat them. I thought Scotland would lose that game.
Oh, let's rewind to the ruck a week ago. I said Wales by 1 point, didn't I? So I was only out by about.
I didn't think it would be close. I thought that obviously Scotland don't have a front row at the moment. If you don't have a front row and you don't have a scrum, you know your pack's going to suffer, and it doesn't matter what backs they have, Stuart Hogg and Finn Russell, etc. If you can't get the ball to them, then there's going to be no chance. You might as well have, you know, Bowden Barrett, stick him in the team as well. It's still not going to happen. So I'm pleased that Wales have eventually turned up. The last couple of seasons they've been dreadful in the Six Nations, and Warren Gatland's been dreadful as well, I believe. I think he's kind of been just going through the motions, almost, it seems like, from the outside. I mean, obviously I'm not involved,
Johnny, this much is some very harsh commentary. Well,
it's just from looking from the outside, and you read the kind of Welsh public's reaction to Gatland and all that. So it's good to see that he's got a second wind. He looks much more relaxed. Obviously, we dealt with him a lot on the Lions tour, where he was beaten up every day in the press, and he just was hating
it. Let's be honest here, he was beaten up by the Kiwi press, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was. Beat himself up sometimes as well by having a few slip-ups early on. But my other positive about Wales is that Lee Halfpenny, I had written him off. I thought Lee Halfpenny had gone. I thought his test days were over. Yes, he's an excellent kicker, and I love watching him kick, but I just thought that he was gone in the head. And he proved that maybe actually there's plenty of life left in him, because I thought he was brilliant.
Okay. In the week in the build up to the game, I had an old school mate of mine. We're having a chat about rugby, as we do, and he's on his way home from work, and I'm usually on deadline. he was saying he looked at it as a fan, not as close as the media are, particularly those who cover Wales. And his point was, he looks at that Wales team, and they picked it on form. They didn't have any alternatives. It made him think of that Wales team at the 2003 World Cup that they picked against New Zealand, because they had nothing to lose. Shane Williams emerges from that team. It was shit or bust.
Whoa! You said it really loudly that time.
and there was an element to that with this Wales team that he's picked it on form. The Scarlets have been tearing it up in the Pro 14 and in Europe. Really exciting players who are playing well, who he's rewarded, and partly because he's got nowhere else to turn. And there are players who've come through this year. Josh Navidi, I think, has been superb for them this year.
California, man.
They've got young wings who are new to the stage.
And so, Johnny, can you explain what you just said? The film, California,
the film,
man.
The film California Man, he looks just like him, doesn't he? When he comes in from the desert, is it?
Okay, fine. Sorry, carry on, Alex.
they've got young players who are playing well.
Can I just give my view on this whole Scarlets thing? Sorry, have you finished now?
Yeah.
We're interrupting you all the time now. On the Scarlets thing, I think what's interesting is how many Scarlets were there? 10 in the team? Mm. 10 in the team. So he's picked Scarlets and a few other people, players around him. And for me, that performance was like an essay on the benefits of cohesion, a team that knows each other. And if you look back through the history of winning World Cups, you'll see this sort of happening quite a lot. So the All Blacks that won in 2011 were almost all Crusaders backs and almost all Chiefs forwards. I've probably got my information wrong, so I'm trying to remember. The 2007 Springboks was based around the Bulls. For me, England's success under Eddie Jones has been it's been a Saracens team with others laced on. So the more you can manage to make that work, and this was slightly foresome, Gatland, obviously, but the more you can manage to make that work, then you can reap the benefits. But now, in an exciting twist, I'm going to read out what Steve Jones asked us to consider here, because he slightly agrees. Talking points, he says. Welsh all-out attacking a la Scarlets was by no means the heart of their performance. They won it because of their incredible D, which is obviously defence.
Sean Street, isn't he?
Yes.
Yeah, he's hip. Sean Edwards, man of the weekend. Then he says, was the Welsh performance most likely a one-off? Yes. You can't put in a shock performance twice. Then there's some stuff about how a knee injury can cause you concussion, so we might return to that in a minute. He said, Saturday games were the best refereed Six Nations games I've seen. Ireland firmed up as Six Nations favourites.
I don't think they're firmed up. I would go slightly against that. I think that Ireland and England are a level pegging, joint favourites.
If you're judging them from the weekend, England performed well or slightly above expectation, and Ireland surely performed slightly below expectation.
Yeah, and England got through that game apart from the Ben Youngs injury. They seemed to get through it okay. There weren't any kind of major fluctuations in terms of the performance. There was no one who was a 2 out of 10, and there was no one who was a 10 out of 10. So it was a good grounding. It's interesting, you talk about the Wales situation and picking on form. That's the one thing that Eddie Jones necessarily doesn't do, isn't it? I mean, you look at someone like...
Well, he says club form is irrelevant,
yeah,
isn't he?
Exactly. So it's intriguing, that the way that these two sides do that. So you've got someone like Mike Brown, who we talk about all the time, daily, you know, should Mike Brown be England's 15? And, you know, I think most people say no more than those that say yes. So it's a great contest, that England-Wales, because you have so many different factors to it. You know, even the team selections are completely different between the coaches.
Alex, what's this week going to be like in terms of England-Wales? Is it going to be full of pop shots in the media from Gatland to Jones and back again?
Well, it won't.
Or are we just going to try and encourage that because that's what makes it fun?
Well, yeah. Well, I think we will encourage it because I think it does make it fun. I know there are readers have contacted me who get bored of the barbs being fired across boundaries.
Well, sometimes it's silly. Okay, we'll get that.
But it can be fun. I think, but I don't think you'll hear anything from England at least until Thursday or Friday. They already, immediately after the game on Sunday night, had shut up shop. They just decided, we're not going to talk about Wales, we're not even going to talk about Ben Youngs. None of the players, they've obviously given scripted answers, but they barely showed any sympathy, which they will obviously be sympathetic to him, but they had just decided, we're going to block that out, we're blocking out Wales, we're not talking about it. And I really think that it's a strategy from Eddie Jones. We've seen it before with him, to just decide to... Some weeks he goes on the front foot. Almost immediately after the game's over, he can be on the front foot, setting the agenda for the following week. This week, I think he's going to try and allow Wales to fire some shots. And if he wants to come back with something towards the end of the week, he will. So I'm not sure there'll be a week of pot shots across the border.
Who was most down from the weekend, Italy or Scotland?
It has to be Scotland, because you look at that Italian side and you go, yeah, they scored two decent tries, and they're... I know we talk about it every year, they're making improvements every year, and they clearly have made improvements from the last time that we were in Rome. I mean, it's hard to judge on the ruckless Foxgate game at Twickenham last year, because that was just such an anomaly. So it's hard to judge their kind of progress, but the fact that they can do that and pull it off, and it creates headlines, and it's obviously given them a lift to be able to do that. And I think that Conor O'Shea's obviously kind of come in and ruffle up his two sides in Italy.
But those two sides have got tough Six Nations now, haven't they? I mean, if Scotland don't do France at the weekend, then they've got England coming up.
You're looking at different expectations. I mean,
but they had these expectations.
Italy, I think, as you put in your match report, the game, the England game went pretty much the way that most of us thought it would go. But Italy, within that game, for the hour before England pulled away, I thought showed a lot more to them.
Yeah,
defensive their issues, they did a lot of good stuff. They've uncovered some promising young players over the last 2 years under Conor O'Shea, and they're inching forward. They're miles behind, but they're inching forward. No one really expected any more from them on Sunday than they delivered. They scored two very well taken tries. Scotland is completely opposite. They were flying from the autumn, full of confidence, without a front row, which is critical. But people back them to win. But
everyone who was at the game said that actually the lack of front row wasn't really the issue. It was one that Wales did such an amazing job with them. And two, I always find this amazing that we can say this, but it appears to be the case. They appear to have slightly believed their own media.
Yeah. Yes.
They appear to have arrived there thinking it was just going to happen.
That's what I'm saying.
Because
they
did it against Australia.
I think their own expectations were sky high. And so when you say, you know, for who was it the most damaging weekend, it was Scotland, because those expectations were punctured. And maybe that's a good thing for them.
And France.
Maybe they're back down to earth and realise it's going to take more than some kind of bold attacking play to win it. They need to grind things out. They need to be a bit more direct. They were far too lateral.
It makes me laugh. People always talk about Gregor Townsend's going to be the next Lions coach and all this kind of thing. But at the moment, his team cannot... they can't cope with the hype. And I agree totally with you, Slotty, that they clearly believe their own hype up there. They need to... Can they play another way as well with Scotland? You know, can they dog a game out? Can they grind it out? I'm not too sure they can at the moment. It's kind of, as Arthur said, it's bleep or bust sometimes for them, I feel. I won't swear in a family podcast, obviously.
No, it's just I love it when occasionally we slip into Arthur mode.
Oh, sorry.
You know, because for listeners that some maybe don't understand or aren't regular enough to know that Alex Lowe is his real name is actually Arthur, or is it the other way around?
It's definitely the other way around. And then Nikita called me Artie, so that's now stuck as well.
At this point in the podcast, we'll move on to a regular feature from last year, the Team of the Week from the Six Nations. So I have in front of me the Times Team of the Week, and we're just going to go through it and discuss what we would change. So the experts from the Times collectively have a front row of Rob Evans, Girardo at hooker, and Samson Lee on the tight head, Ian Henderson and Alan Wynne-Jones in the second row. A back row of Peter Amani, Sam Simmons, back page superstar, and Josh Navidi, who is a California man.
Yeah? Absolutely.
Correct.
Yeah.
Halfbacks Gareth Davis and Johnny Sexton, and centres Owen Farrell, Scott Williams, and a back three of Steph Evans and Anthony Watson on the wings, with Lee Halfpenny at fullback. Let's just go straight to that number 10 first, shall we? Can anyone possibly argue against having Johnny Sexton number 10 after effectively single-handedly saving Ireland's skin and winning that game with the most dramatic moment of the whole of the Six Nations weekend with that last-minute drop goal?
Yeah, exactly. That's what he's there for. That was his Johnny Wilkinson moment, if you want. To do that from that distance and strike it so well, I mean, a brilliant piece of individual skill.
What changes would I make? I thought... in the second row, Joe Launchbury deserves recognition for his game yesterday. I thought he was one of the England's main ball carriers. I'd have him in for Ian Henderson. Alex, any changes you'd make?
Mako Vunipola.
Yeah,
I think it's pretty harsh to have him. I'd have put him forward for our collective team. Looking elsewhere on that, I think it's a very strong team, very solid team. I'd have put Mako's case forward.
No, I'm happy with that as well, and I'm just.
Well, if you have a few more disagreements.
I mean, Owen Farrell obviously kicked. What was it? 16. Well, he got 16 points in his try as well. I think that he, I mean, his level now is just incredibly high. You know, his base level for performance. We're talking about player ratings earlier. You know, his base level for performance is about an 8 out of 10 at the moment in these big test matches, and he's going to be key for England, and it could come down to a Sexton versus Farrell shootout. On the last day of the Six Nations at Twickenham as well, which would be brilliant.
I think Peter O'Mahony's an interesting selection there, because he, we all know, last summer captured the Lions in the first test, dropped for the second test, was looking at moving away from Munster, or there were offers for him to leave Ireland. He re-signs, and he was, it was Johnny Sexton's drop goal, 41 phases into a move in which they hadn't really, they couldn't get any further than 42 metres out. Peter O'Mahony's contribution through that whole phase of play was immense, and he is, we saw against England in the decisive game last year just how important he is to that team. He's the heartbeat of Ireland, and they, you know, it wasn't a perfect performance by them. For it to have come down to that, they'll be disappointed, but to show the mettle that it required to keep patience against a France defence who'd stopped competing in the breakdown and were just going to keep them out, to eventually go for it and win it from there. When Stephen Jones says it confirms them as title favourites, that's possibly what he means. I'm not sure it does confirm them as title favourites, but it certainly showed they've got the balls to win a big game.
You are being potty mouth, aren't you?
Can we have an Italian in there, do you think? I was going to suggest Tommaso Boni, the Italian 13.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he did slightly wave England through for that second try, didn't he? I mean, he sort of stroked Johnny May a little bit and then let him go away, and then he tickled Anthony Watson. But if you can forgive him that, I thought he had a pretty outstanding game.
Yeah, he played well. I thought I liked Giammaroli as well, the young loose forward who Mike Catt was raving about in his interview with Ben Kay in our paper over the weekend.
He was the guy that Joe Launchbury absolutely killed.
Yeah.
Joe Launchbury killed him twice inside a minute.
Yeah.
What do we
that
think?
Aside,
he'd
check,
but he's still, he could be in the team. He got up and carried on.
And well. also, I did like Sebastian Negri, the Harbury college boy.
It's very good. But what do we think of Parisi at the moment? Is he? Because normally you'd expect a big performance from him in a game like that. I didn't think he was overly impressive.
Well, he did steal one line out.
135 caps. Or,
he stole one England line out 5 yards out, which would have, that was a fairly crucial point in the game.
The only lost line out of the day for England.
Yeah, and Italy, well, he's gone for a scan today, as we know.
Mm.
If Italy are stripped of Parisi, then that's about as catastrophic as a loss as any team could have in this Six Nations, I would say.
Yep.
We'll just look ahead to next weekend's fixtures. Ireland, Italy first up in Dublin. England and Wales, England v Wales, Twickenham. Scotland v France. We'll just go through them one by one. Does anyone give Italy the remotest chance in hell of causing an upset in Dublin?
No, not
at all. And that,
Joe Smith will just kill his players this week, and they can only perform better, surely.
If they don't come away with 5 points, then that's as bad as a defeat for them, I think.
Okay, all right. Just quickly between us, what will be the points differential there? Ireland by
30.
I actually would. I'm going to say more. 35. I think you'll get an angry Ireland against a discombobulated Italy. Have we seen them discombobulated much, or is that a word we use in the podcast?
It's a debut for that word, definitely.
It's a great debut for discombobulation. And Italy have had a 6 day turnaround, which brings us to England, who also have a 6 day turnaround against Wales, have an extra day's preparation. Well, we'll find out if that's going to have any influence on the game. England-Wales, how do we see that one going, Alex?
England to win that at home. I don't think the 6 day turnaround will affect England at all. I think they're too strong. They'd be too slick at the moment.
No, absolutely with Alex there. And also, England have been preparing for these situations and scenarios and these turnarounds, and they did it in the autumn when they just completely ripped up their training schedule. They moved hotels for no reason at all to kind of simulate these travel days. It's only a 2 hour flight back from Rome to,
and England will have got a real wake up call on Wales from that. I mean,
yeah,
you know, if they needed any persuasion, that they just look at that game and go, this is going to be an almighty contest.
Yeah,
so England by what?
I'm going England by 15 for that one. I think they'll steam home in the end.
I think it'll be, they might have the comfort of one score.
Yeah, I'd have said 7.
Yeah, you're both wrong.
Scotland, France. That's probably the hardest to call, I would say, of the three. Scotland wounded. France angry that because they nearly won, they could have won.
They're probably quite buoyed by it.
They'll think we're going places. Yeah. But they are without Matthew Jalibert.
Yeah.
Yeah, their situation at fly half is...
Thank you, Eddie Butler.
Is not great. And I think Scotland at home, like you say, you know, they've been a bit of a hype job, and it's really time for them to turn up now.
Okay, well, I'm actually backing Scotland to win that one, so I'm going three home wins. Anyone disagree?
No, I would say three home wins.
Yeah, I have to agree as well. I know it's boring, but it's just the way the fixtures fall, isn't it?
On that bombshell, recording from our Rome studios, thank you everyone for joining us. Can I just say that we do have this new email address, theruck@thetimes.co.uk. We have had quite a significant number of emails rattling in over the last couple of weeks. We haven't done anything about it yet.
Are these spam emails, or are they genuine emails, or is it like Giacomo sending you kind of a...
No, easy. There's quite a lot of fan mail. I mean, you know, there's a lot of love out there for us. We haven't addressed any of the issues and themes that have come up in them yet, because it's slightly in bits and pieces. So next week we're going to make a commitment to go with some of the email feedback to lead our conversation. So please do email us. I would just like to chuck out there a thought that I had, so listeners might want to reply on this. First game that England have, their first home game in the Six Nations is coming up. Price of tickets, average cost, I don't know, over £100. Hospitality costs gone through the roof. I hear a lot of this. So I have a question that I don't really know the answer to myself, which I wonder, are the RFU right to stick up prices and costs as far as they do because the market allows them to do that, and every penny of profit that they get literally does get ploughed back into the game? Or should ticket prices be more accessible to more people? If you have a view on that in particular, then get back to us on our email, theruck@thetimes.co.uk. Tell us anything else you feel about our podcast, about Ruck, about life and love generally. And thank you very much for listening to us. We will be back next Monday.
Hi. This is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.